Most solar thermal plants operate in the 25 to 30% solar to grid efficiency rate, and several of the new plants have reached the gigawatt mark in produced electricity. Spain alone has over a dozen towers nearing completion, with a capacity of 1.4 gigawatts and 8 hours of heat storage after dusk. With new intercountry high-capacity transmission lines being built throughout the European Union, Spain's investment could see it become a new leader in energy export throughout Europe, clean energy to boot. While the technology of solar thermal has been in development for 30 years, new innovation could make this form of power generation even more efficient. The internet search giant Google, who has invested in solar thermal research since 2008, announced a major success this April. Google has focused on redesigning the mirrors, using alternative materials on both the reflective surface of the mirror and the substrate on which the mirror is mounted. The new technology could halve the cost of building a solar thermal plant and bring the cost of electricity down to 5 cents per kilowatt hour or less. The prototype is being internally tested before more rigorous external testing, but two major US-based solar companies, BrightSource and eSolar, are already interested in the technology. Google is a major investor in both companies and has said if the prototype works, the companies will use the technology in constructing new plants. Modular designs are also being tested for those of you concerned about loss of efficiency during transmission over power lines. A new design by Sterling Energy Systems is scaled for the neighborhood level and expected to produce electricity at the cost of 12 to 15 cents per kilowatt hour. The system, called the Sun Catcher, consists of a large mirrored dish that concentrates sunlight onto a Stirling engine. The temperature difference between the hot and cool sides of the engine drives the pistons, which generate electricity. Each unit can produce about 25 kilowatts of electricity and is about 30 meters across at the base. It resembles a large satellite dish of the old style used to pick up television signals. The technology has the benefit of using less water than solar thermal plants to collect heat over a large area to drive turbines in a central facility. The turbines in a traditional solar power tower use a lot of water to keep them cool, but Stirling's design doesn't require water, making it ideal for desert climates where solar thermal is well suited. The downside to the modular system is the lack of central storage for the energy that is produced, so right now the system can only make electricity during daylight hours where other solar thermal plants can continue supplying energy overnight. More fantastic designs are still in the future. If an accessible source of sodium can be found in space, we could see a solar thermal power generator built in orbit to provide electricity to a space station, or beam back down to the planet via microwave. Orbital mirrors to redirect sunlight would benefit a solar thermal plant far more than a photovoltaic plant, by raising the ambient temperature around the plant as well as redirect sunlight to the mirrors. The power tower can use ambient heat as well as directed heat to generate electricity. While not without its faults, solar thermal is an inexpensive, clean, and efficient way to generate massive amounts of electricity without many of the drawbacks of solar cells. Cheaper to construct and maintain, commercial solar power designs are already being built in California, China, Australia, Spain, and many other sunny countries, and the electricity they generate will soon be available to those of us in colder climes. Able to generate power through hours of darkness, solar thermal could break the hold on baseload power currently occupied by fossil fuels. And with breakthroughs in energy collection and plant efficiency, we are growing very close to the day when renewable energy will be cheaper than coal.
Thanks, Brett. Well, these are all this week's issues on Terrainforma. If you have any comments or if you want to re-listen our show, visit our website terrainforma.ca. I've been your host, Sana, and thanks for listening.
The rights of tens of thousands of migrants working as living caregivers in Ontario are being neglected. As the name suggests, caregivers give care to those in need of assistance. But who's caring for the rights and needs of migrants working as living caregivers? Migrante Ontario is a non-profit organization advocating for the rights and well-being of migrants working as living caregivers. The passing of Bill C-50 has made it easier for people working in Canadian migrant worker programs to work with temporary status, but harder to gain permanent residency. Working with temporary status in Canada leaves the rights of migrant workers far less protected. However, most migrants who come to Canada are led to believe that they have the chance to become Canadian citizens. Interested in getting involved with the Guelph contingent of Migrante Ontario? Connect with us at migrante.ontario@gmail.com. That's migrante.ontario@gmail.com.
The following is brought to you by Echo Weekly. I'm publisher Sean Rosen, and I've been asked to record a radio spot and talk to you about why you should read Echo Weekly. So, do yourself a favor. pick up a copy of Echo Weekly, check it out. And if you don't, ask yourself why, because as a person, you might be lacking. Thank you. Echo Weekly, free every Thursday.
The rights of tens of thousands of migrants working as living caregivers in Ontario are being neglected. As the name suggests, caregivers give care to those in need of assistance. But who's caring for the rights and needs of migrants working as living caregivers? Migrante Ontario is a non-profit organization advocating for the rights and well-being of migrants working as living caregivers. The passing of Bill C-50 has made it easier for people working in Canadian migrant worker programs to work with temporary status, but harder to gain permanent residency. Working with temporary status in Canada leaves the rights of migrant workers far less protected. However, most migrants who come to Canada are led to believe that they have the chance to become Canadian citizens. Interested in getting involved with the Guelph contingent of Migrante Ontario? Connect with us at migrante.ontario@gmail.com. That's migrante.ontario@gmail.com.
CJAM, the station that turns the
power on.
Welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Today my special guest will be...
Renee Trepanier. I'm glad to be here.
So, what have you come to talk to us about today?
Well, when I first met you, I was telling you about my experiences with the fact that my mother had multiple sclerosis. And she was diagnosed when I was about 8 years old. So I've come to talk about the experiences of what a child goes through when they have a parent who's diagnosed with a disability.
So... for those who might not be as familiar with the condition, can you tell me some of the physical effects it's had?
Well, multiple sclerosis right now is known as a disease that is attacks the nervous system. So it can attack anything that your nerves help you do. So perhaps you could lose your eyesight, lose the ability to walk, to write, to talk. It's endless, the amount of things that it can do.
So how did you feel when you first heard about the diagnosis?
Well, considering I was about 8, I just was kind of confused. My mother, when she was diagnosed, didn't seem too bad. She was walking with a cane. So that was okay. And then as time went on, and it wasn't very much time, she had a very rapidly progressing multiple sclerosis. So what happened was she went from a cane straight to a walker, then into a wheelchair, into a motorized cart. So therefore, it happened very fast, and I just basically had to roll with the punches definitely keep my end of the bargain inside the household. I ended up taking on a lot of responsibilities, doing the housework and cleaning the laundry, all that.
For a kid, it must have been difficult, as there's really not enough public education on the subject of disabilities, I think. How did you feel about the knowledge base you had?
Well, back then, yeah, I didn't have a lot of knowledge, and anything I did hear from doctors or overhearing my mother speak to other people was a little confusing. Wasn't quite sure what they meant, and I just could see physically what my mom was going through. And I found a lot of people around me didn't have a lot of education either. And the older I got, the more I was aware of how hard that was. I started to see how difficult it was to even just take her shopping. A lot of places in my town didn't have any accessible ramps and weren't friendly to the people with the disabilities. A lot of the doorways are very narrow, so it was difficult. And I started to see things through her eyes, and it was frustrating.
So, do you know what sorts of treatment methods were applied?
At the time, that was back in the 80s, she was going to London. She was a participant in a study group. They were doing some, they were thinking about doing chemotherapy and seeing if that would help people with MS. I don't remember what the results were from that particular study. I just remember that she lost her hair. She was in the hospital for a long time, and I was taken care of by my grandmother. Things were very different. It was just a very confusing time for me. But with that said, there are many treatments now. Multiple sclerosis is an extremely timely topic. It's all over the news, especially this week, with talk of what's going on in Europe with the one doctor who says that if he opens up the veins and clears any blockages, that tends to help MS patients.
So it's basically suggesting improving quality of life rather than promising a cure.
That's right, because there is no cure for MS right now. There's a lot of people who are on the side of naturopathic medicine as well. If you improve your diet and try to exercise as much as you can and keep yourself mobile, that also improves the quality of life for patients with MS.
In what ways did you support your mother emotionally or just by being there for her?
Well, I was always the one who gave her a hug. I always had a very good, close relationship with my mother. I tried as hard as I could to help out around the house, keep things clean. She was quite strict, though. She was a neat freak, had the white glove. So sometimes it was frustrating. And the closer I got to my teens, the more rebellious I became. So I wasn't always helpful to my mother, sad to say. But I became kind of resentful of the fact she had a disability. I wanted to go out and play with my friends. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And darn it, why can't you just be like everybody else, you know? But
well, show me a teenager who doesn't have a rebellious streak. And for those of you who might have guessed, no, I didn't have one.
Oh, no, not at all, right?
Yeah, I was a perfect child. But, so what was the most difficult aspect of dealing with it?
Sometimes when I was younger, and I had mentioned to you earlier about just maybe taking her shopping, we'd go out into the neighborhood. I might want to go to the bank with her. Well, we found out a lot of these places were not accessible, as I said, in my small town at the time. I know things have improved greatly since, but back in the 80s, that was not the case. So I ended up having to do her banking for her, her shopping at the convenience store. She was a naughty girl, and she used to smoke, so I used to go in with my letter from my mother. They used to accept those back in the day, a letter from the parent to pick up her pack of cigarettes, and I just felt like I was burdened a little bit. And then when I would take her out myself and find out the sidewalks were all choppy and rickety, and I thought that was frustrating, and I couldn't... And another thing, an interesting point I wanted to bring up was just the views from other people. I never was picked on as a child for my mother having a disability. Not once. Children are very understanding, but I found I got the most grief from adults. And it was really strange because people would see me pushing her, and maybe I was about maybe 12 years old at this point. They'd see me out and about in the neighborhood with her, and they would look at us strange. And she has received some comments just regarding how is it possible that she had any children. But not everybody with a disability starts off life like that. Sometimes anything like a car accident or just being diagnosed with something like MS or having a stroke, you know, it can change your quality of life in an instant.
That's the thing. A lot of people tend to assume just because one part of the body is sort of damaged that nothing really works the way it should. So kind of a common misconception, but people do tend to overlook the fact that people with disabilities do have an inherent strength. It takes a lot of courage in some cases to get up and take care of things. I mean, you have to look within yourself to find new and creative ways of doing things. For those of you who have heard this show for a long time, you might remember the guest I had on who said, having a disability is the new normal. How do you feel about that, Renee?
You know what? That's exactly right. I would agree with that. When I was a child, I felt isolated. And of course, when I come here, it's not a story about, oh, feel sorry for me, pity me. I think that I wouldn't be who I am today if I didn't have the things that I went through. But when you get older, you start to notice around the world that everybody doesn't matter who you are, has some sort of story to tell. Yeah. And that there are many people with disabilities, and therefore we should just say differently abled. Yeah. Not necessarily that they're disability, that they have no ability. They do, but it's just different, and we should be more mindful of everybody's differences.
It goes with a saying I've shared many times on this show, saying among people with disabilities that goes, I can do anything you can, it's just a question of how.
That's right.
One of my favorites.
That's a good one.
For those of you who heard the episode with our good friend, the psychologist, Dr. Anton Linares, who said, the biggest disability is being human.
Actually, that's an interesting one. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, he said it as a joke.
Well, actually, he's got a point there, too, right? Because our own minds, we tend to be our own worst critics, and we tend to limit ourselves as human beings, right? So if we can just kind of break those barriers, we'd all be much better for it.
Is there a particular story about you and your mother that really stands out from time shared together? It sounds like you were there for her quite a bit, so...
You know, it's funny, but I was about 12 years old around the time that she was going to London quite frequently for these treatments for chemo, and I just remembered just bonding with her and really getting to know her. And I needed her at that point because you're a preteen, and taking those long train rides with her on the Via. And I love the first-class service. That's what she had to take to obviously get good service as a disabled person, and obviously you can't do it in coach. But I enjoyed that. I enjoyed little shopping trips with her, going to restaurants. She tried to make it as fun for me as possible.
If you had one thing you could see added to improve the lives of people with this condition, what might it be?
Well, I think things are going on the right track right now. There's more awareness. And with more awareness than the fact that eventually people will not discriminate against people with disabilities. I love the fact that stores and neighborhoods are being outfitted to help those with disabilities. I see improvements every day, so I think we're on the right track, just more awareness and more understanding.
There are some places that are legally mandated to have accessible cabs running 24 hours a day, and other parts of the world have raised rims and sidewalks for people who are visually impaired. These are some really amazing changes. And people should look at it in terms of having a disability. It's like stones. You have three options. You can go around them, you can go over them, or you can build with them.
Well, you're full of good sayings, Cam.
Why, thank you. I'm sure one of our favorite guests here, DJ Dave Squeaky Wheels, disapproves of my sayings, because the last time I had one for him, it was, how did you get past security?
And see, you have a great sense of humor, too, which I know comes across on your show. So.
Thank you very much.
But, I'm so amazed at the awareness nowadays. Everywhere you turn, there is some sort of fundraising event, and there's people. But I think with my own personal, my own personal story, I know that MS is going leaps and bounds. There's great awareness out there. The walk, the bike ride. Every year they do so much to raise funds. And even though we don't have a cure, we are raising hope, at least.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time to do this.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
They told me that I was lazy, that I'd never amount to anything. Everything was confusing and frustrating. Then I found out I had a learning disability, that there are solutions and people who can help.
The Learning Disabilities Association of Canada is dedicated to helping people with learning disabilities achieve their true potential in school, in the workplace, and in society. Visit our website at ldac.ca. This message from the Learning Disabilities Association of Canada and this station.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Renee Trepanier, who told us an amazing story of facing multiple sclerosis with courage and devotion. That kind of reminds me of a song, and her message puts me in the mood to hear You're Not the Only One by John Wetton, because the truth is, in every family, we have been touched by a disability somewhere. That was You're Not the Only One by John Wetton. Song that reminds me that there's always the most amazing stories from people with disabilities or the people around them. If you know such a person, write handi-link at cjam.ca. We'll get your story on the air. And now the moment I'm sure somebody out there has been waiting for, this week's announcement from CJAM. Can't sleep at night? Got music on the brain? If so, join CJAM's Graveyard Guys and Ghouls Collective. The station is looking for new volunteers who are interested in hosting late-night music programs. And here are just some of the benefits of joining Graveyard Guys and Ghouls Collective. You'll get on-air experience without the weekly obligation of a regular time slot, unless, of course, you want one. No Canadian content quotas to achieve. That's right, no CanCon. Our free-form block programming allows you to play whatever genre or genres you want. Interested? Check out the Station Collectives tab on our website, www.cjam.ca. Find out how you, yes, you, can be involved. CJAM is a nonprofit radio station that has operated on the University of Windsor campus for over 3 decades. We're redefining radio in Windsor, Detroit. CJAM also is redefining the boundaries of accessibility, because when I have the chance to interview someone with such an amazing story, it really gets out there and speaks to what a person with a disability can accomplish with just the right amount of support. I mean, sometimes it can be a difficult thing acknowledging that a person has such a condition. 15 years ago, shortly after I suffered the stroke I had as a kid, it was hard for me to adapt to the new way of things. The truth of the matter is, it's not just a person with a disability who has to be ready for the change, be ready to take on whatever life throws them. The people around a person with a disability have to be there to offer support and strength. In my own situation, I could not have made it through without the helping hand of my loving family. And for Renee's mother, it sounds like she had an excellent source of support.
Yeah, that's correct. It definitely doesn't affect just you when you find out the devastating news that you've been diagnosed with a disease or a tragedy happens in your life where you get, you know, become disabled in some respect. Everybody around you is affected. You may have young children, old children, or your parents. Everybody is profoundly touched by your experience. And the more that we rally around the person who has a disability and support them, the better it is.
Now, what you were saying earlier about the lack of accessibility in buildings, that really has changed to the point at which I think it's being considered nowadays, when a building is constructed, or even designed for that matter, that sooner or later a person with a disability is going to pass that way. And if it's a business, they're going to want to do business there. I mean, it's not unreasonable to expect that a person won't do business with an organization that they can't physically enter. That's just clear reasoning. But really, to see the change in the lives of individuals with disabilities, it's just a remarkable thing. Every now and then I reflect upon it, but not only has the technology, the diagnosis, and the treatment improved, but more and more conditions are being recognized as disabilities. Take, for example, mental illness. Long time ago, a person diagnosed with mental illness would be institutionalized. These days, there's options such as medication, counseling. That really is humanity's great progress. Now, I grant it's always going to be sort of an uphill battle. The work is never quite finished, but if you can improve the quality of life for a person with a disability, then I think you've done your job.
Yep, that's right.
So, Renee, if you could give any message of hope to someone out there who might be a youth struggling with a family member who has a disability, what might you tell them?
Well, just like the song you played, Cam, I think it's very important to remember that you're not alone. And don't be shy and don't try to hold it in. Don't hold in your feelings and try to be the tough person. I went through a huge stage like that myself, and it does no good, you carrying that baggage with you all your life. Speak out. Talk to your friends. Talk to neighbors. Talk to your teachers. Talk to anybody who will listen. You'll find that the more you talk, the more the people will rally around you and support you and help you, because we as humans, I know we see a lot of negativity.